friends and folks, and welcome back to Romance of the Two Networks. Two networks have joined to discuss the latest and greatest in books. They haven't written any books since this because there's been no reason to. I'm Six Detmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Jennifer Uncle from Scanline Media.
And I'm Jackson Tyler from Ignore Mapping. M is resting in bed watching anime right now.
Goals.
Goals. Macro 7 seems so good. Why is there a Karibo? I don't know. I guess it was first.
Wait, you mean like a Karibo, like a Goomba?
I guess the Goombas. I'm just gonna post the image, into the chat, which M is going to see and be confused, and then have this be revealed on a podcast. But why not just do this? You tell me, is this or is this not a Karibo?
What the fuck is that?
That's a Karibo, is what that is.
Again,
I know Macro 7 was like 5 years before Yu-Gi-Oh! I'm not, you know.
that's the trouble with trims or something. Like, what?
What if Tribble should have a face? That's what Wednesday. It's been they were a bit sick today, and we've recorded 3 hours of podcast already. They have rested, and they're watching anime that seems sick as hell. Whereas I'm here to talk about a book that is also sick as hell. The stuff is good. Things are good, and I enjoy when that is true.
Have you had any extracurricular Three Kingdoms content in the time since you even had a week off? You had a good.
So I had a week off, and learned, because I was meant to be on last week's episode, but then AmeriScore recording went for an hour longer than expected. So everyone looked forward to a double length AmeriScore, I guess. And then I had heard the news that while I wasn't there, you had all decided to get into a movie and buy a movie that I had have had on my hard drive for like 6 months and have been waiting for the opportunity. I didn't get a chance to watch them this week because I was busy with Outer Wilds. But once I heard that, I was like, oh, it's on now. It's on now. The gates have opened. I felt bad about missing last week because it's the thing. You know, it's the Red Cliff battle. I will be watching that movie next week. I have not watched it this week. I know Jen has watched it now, but I'm sure we'll talk about it more when more than one person has seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we'll have a proper conversation later. Mm-hmm. I would have loved to have watched it this week. I am working on watching three movies and playing two games for one podcast because we're idiots.
What's happening with that?
So basically we had this feature on, so we have our patron show, Oops All Anime, and then we have had this monthly reward where it's like, hey, you can vote on Is It Anime, which is basically where we just do that show but we're not talking about anime.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
And we're like, we should stop doing this. We can do it every now and then, but doing it every month actually just means we're cannibalizing the anime episodes, and it's bad. But we should send it off in grand fashion. So let's just do like a million things because we're stupid.
What is the exact, or have you not announced?
No, it was a poll ran. People got to decide. Oh. We are covering Can Androids Prey? Itch.io game.
Yes.
We are covering Thief Gold.
No, not an anime.
We are covering the Speed Racer live action film.
Yes, that's an anime.
Equilibrium.
That's an anime.
And Battle Angel Alita. Or Alita Battle Angel. Alita Battle Angel. I got it backwards.
That's a manga.
Yep, that's the third option, it turns out. The fun thing is that we realized we named it this because like the first couple episodes we had a segment at the end, we're like, well, is it anime? And we're like, this segment's really stupid, let's just talk about the thing.
I mean, the answer is almost always yes, because the definition of anime culturally is very broad, and you can wink and like fit a lot of things into it. If you mean anime as like a tonal descriptor more than an actual thing. You're right. It does break down very quickly and the gimmick wears out in terms of a thing. I understand why this choice is made.
Yeah. But as far as Three Kingdoms news, I know, Jen, you watched Redcliffe,
mm-hmm.
all 4 hours of it, and had a good time.
Yeah, if you're trying to follow along with what we're doing, you want to make sure to get the one that's split into two parts, because at some point they released one that's that cobbles the two parts together. Specifically, they did it for international audiences like the United States and stuff like that. But watching the whole two parts, it's a very good pair of movies. And it's John Woo doing what he does best, really.
Excellent. I have been enjoying the latest and greatest DLC for Total War Three Kingdoms, Mandate of Heaven, where... Total War Three Kingdoms, when it launched, starts with like, okay, we've managed to defeat the Yellow Turban Rebellion, and we've started to push back, you know, the Coalition is formed and push back against Dong Zhuo, but now Dong Zhuo is starting to crumble, so the Coalition is crumbling. That's where it starts. Which is a pretty good ways into the fucking book. With this DLC, it starts at the beginning, which... It one is just great because it's just fucking chaos, but also it adds a bunch of new factions, which are really cool. Like, it adds the Emperor, and if you play as the Emperor, it's just like, oh, your economy is completely fucked and everyone around you is corrupt. Good luck surviving.
That's good.
Or you can play as the leaders of the Yellow Scarves, and it's just like, okay, you have this faction that doesn't work like every other faction. You've got your own tech tree, and also the way you make progress is by making people excited about rebellion. So you have to kind of make like stupid attacks that cost a lot of bodies, because then people are like, hell yeah, the rebellion's working, and they sign up for your cause, and it's really cool.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, I know a lot of the games do begin after the Yellow Turban Rebellion,
mm-hmm.
because that's like right when the factions that like you expect to see kind of start at their equal footing, so it makes sense game design wise. But bringing it back to the start of the book, just because like that could go in so many different ways, because there's just entire factions that could just not show up or have formed correctly, right, because of how those years can go.
Totally. I was playing, and I saw fucking Cao Cao sending a party through, and I was like, oh, Cao Cao, where's his kingdom? And I'm like, he doesn't fucking have one.
Nope.
That's just Cao Cao's boys. What the fuck?
His dad's still alive, so he's not gone off on one yet.
And I was like, man, if I could reach him, because I'm playing as the Yellow Turbans, you know, populist, let's do it. I was like, man, if I could reach him, I could just stop Cao Cao from being a thing. And it was very tempting, but I would have had to declare war on about 8 warlords just to reach him, so he gets away for now.
There you go.
But yeah, definitely recommend it. I think the DLC adds to, like, you know, you have a lot of the ability to sort of defy history, but starting further back, the ability to, like, snowball into complete alternate history is way stronger and way more interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really cool.
I want to play one of those games one day. That game seems very cool, but very... I'm just not very good at strategy games.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I will say is that it plays almost closer to like a fucking Crusader Kings than previous Total War games do. And you have an ability, like, if you start a battle, it'll say, like, based on, you know, like, if it was AI versus AI, we figured this would be a close victory or a decisive victory. And you can just say, I'm okay with that, and it'll just do the math, and you don't have to play it.
Mm-hmm.
Which sometimes is very nice, especially because even if you do like the tactics, those battles take a long time, and you do a lot of them. Sometimes you're just like, yeah, no, just auto-resolve this. I don't want to fucking...
Yeah, the scale of Total War is so big.
Yeah, it's massive.
Especially, I feel like Three Kingdoms is like a particularly large one of those games, because it depends what it's doing, right? Like, sometimes it's in certain areas and different areas, it's got a different size of a scope.
Well, I actually feel like the scope is a little more controlled compared to some of the older stuff because they need to have the heroes matter, right?
Oh, right, of course, because they've all got generals.
Right, and they play like Dynasty Warriors, right? Like, you can send Lu Bu into, like, squads of fucking cavalry, and he will just cut them the fuck up. And he can challenge other generals to duels, and it'll be this, like, elaborate, you know, like, choreographed, like, you know, martial arts fight in the middle of the battlefield as the troops, like, surround them in a circle and start, like, banging their spears and chanting. It's fucking cool.
Cool.
That sounds awesome.
Video games. Check them out.
But we actually have chapters of a book to talk about. That's why we're here, actually. chapters 52, 53, and 54, and I'll start with my summary of chapter 52. Zhuge Liang temporizes with Lu Su. Zhao Zilong captures Guiyang. Lu Su heads to Jingzhou to ask Xuanda to explain why he's taken the region. It is revealed that Xuanda is acting in support of Liu Qi, son of Liu Biao, whose lands these were. Lu Su agrees not to contest Xuanda's holdings while Liu Qi lives. Xuanda moves to secure his land, sending Zhao Zilong to capture Ling Ling. Ling Ling's governor, Zhao Fan, tries to use his widowed sister-in-law to seduce Zhao Zilong and kill him, but Zilong escapes the trap and captures the city. Zhang Fei, jealous, insists on a chance to achieve a similar victory at Wuling, but Kong Ming makes him promise something first. What is that promise, read on?
So how much do we have to talk about before we can talk about Zhao Zilong being like, I do not need wives. I am too manly for wives. And Xuanda's like, damn, you're so manly, you don't need wives. That's what it's all about.
But it's also the moment of he's like, listen, Zhao Fan being like, listen, my name's Zhao, your name's Zhao, we're from the same village, we're brothers, here's my sister, you should fuck her. And she's like, you just said that's my sister now, we can't do this. Do you, what? This is a bad scheme. You have set up your own failure here.
No one said he was smart.
Under the circumstances, I feel like Zhao's reaction here is completely reasonable.
Yeah. Just a bad scheme, really. If you just been like, I think you're really cool, here's a lady you should get with, you might have had a better chance than saying, here's your new sister.
They're really two separate schemes. They don't belong together.
Not so much. Not so much, no. I do really like just, you know, another classic Kong Ming where Lu Su comes up and he's like, oh, you know, you really, like, seems like you kind of fucked us over by taking Jingzhou. You really betrayed our agreement. And Kong Ming's like, well, of course we were doing it to support the son of Liu Biao. And he's like, if you were doing that, he'd be here. And Kong Ming, like, snaps his fingers and he steps out of the shadows. He's like, oh, okay.
He really prepares for everything.
He really does. He really does. Though I think it's not until chapter 54 that we really get the great Kong Ming word work. But I don't know. Most of this is just like the Ling Ling trying to be like, no, we're not gonna surrender. And then they get their asses kicked and like, okay, we'll surrender.
It's good, yeah. The stuff with Xuanda and Kong Ming finally being like, okay, we actually have to do things. We can't just walk about, right? Like, we're gonna take some cities. You gotta build up. You gotta have a home city before you build up your units. Kong Ming has played Total War before, and I just really like the stuff, especially with like the Lu Su coming like, yo, this is totally not honorable. What you're doing is super not honorable. And Cumming's like, yeah, whatever, I don't care, goodbye. but Xuanda's always like, no, I must find a way to justify this to myself. Whereas Cumming's like, this is for the this fixes the world. You do what you gotta do.
Yeah. So we head into chapter 53. Lord Guan spares Huangshang. Sun Quan battles Zhang Liao. Kong Ming makes Zhang Fei sign a written oath that he'll get the job done, then sends him off with his troops. Zhang Fei is no less successful, swiftly compelling Wu Ling's surrender. Lord Guan discerns it's his time to take a city. Mom says it's my time to capture a city. and heads to Nanyang. Kong Ming fears Lord Guan is being overzealous, and sends Xuanda to back him up. Lord Guan duels Huang Zhong 3 times, but they are both so evenly matched and so honorable that the only openings are by way of luck, and neither is willing to capitalize on them. Realizing that Huang Zhong intentionally spared Lord Guan, Governor Hong Shuang Zhang, orders him executed, but the people rebel, kill the governor, and surrender to Xuanda. Meanwhile, Sun Quan does battle with Zhang Liao, who serves Cao Cao. Zhang Liao remains unconquered, and Sun Quan's commanders Song Qian and Taishi Si die trying to defeat him. In the northwest, a star falls from the sky. Kong Ming reads this sign that Liu Qi is going to die. Indeed he does, and Lu Su arrives to take Jing Zhou as promised. What does Kong Ming say to him? Read on.
So, I love the way that Huang Zhong pretends to fight Lord Guan here. Like, when he gets him into the position where he talked it over with the governor, and he's like, okay, I'll just use my archery skills. He just takes his bow and dry plucks it twice with nothing in it. And then the third time, he aims right for the knot of the helmet and shoots there instead. And finally, that basically the first 2 times, Lord Guan is just seeing this thinking, oh, he must be a really bad shot. But then the third time, it's like, oh, he could totally kill me if he wanted to. I'd better get out of here.
Yeah, and of course, earlier, their previous duel, they were fighting, and then Lord Guan startled Huang Zhong's horse, who threw him off, and Lord Guan was like, this isn't honorable, I can't kill you here. Go back to your base and come back tomorrow, we'll do this proper.
Get a new horse.
Yeah, it all rules. I mean, Lord Guan's always, like, the hero all the time. He's just too honorable.
Mm-hmm.
Especially after, like, the Cao Cao incident last week put that to the test.
Mm-hmm. There's also a great moment after they've captured the city, because the rebellion was led by Wei Yan, who has the governor killed and then surrenders to Xuanda. And then Kong Ming's like, okay, we gotta kill this little weasel now. he's like, listen, it's dishonorable to deliver your homeland and kill your lord. And Xuanda's like, I'm pretty sure that's what literally everyone who's ever surrendered to us has done. Kong is like, okay, fine.
Yeah, like, at least more than 75% of these surrenders have happened because someone is essentially taking their lord's head and bringing it over as a welcome gift.
Yeah, I feel like it must just have been Kong Ming knew that Xuanda wouldn't let it happen and just wanted to make Wei Yang anxious to do a good job.
I would probably say that. Xuanda's not a hard man to read.
Not so much. Meanwhile, we got Sun Quan just not fucking getting it done versus Cao Cao's forces. Just kind of beefing it.
Almost like they're the third kingdom that don't matter. I know, I'm mean to the Southland. People are. I know the Suns have their fans. It's not like just an entirely Cao Cao Xuanda split. But definitely the way they are treated in this book is like, oh, now that Kong Ming's left and they're out of the plot. they just keep fucking up.
But their scheme this time. They're like talking to each other and they're like, oh, this is a perfect plan. We're going to stack some hay and light it on fire and then shout rebellion. And they'll be convinced that the entire city is against them. And they try that. And Zhang Liao is like, they probably just stacked some hay and lit it on fire. Kill them. Like, what are we doing right now?
Yeah, and from the start, their plot is completely foiled because his men are taking off their armor because they had a successful battle. He's like, no, what are you doing? We're still in wartime. We need to stay alert. So everyone keep their armor on and That, along with a bunch of other things, ends up saving his life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, just a real shitty scheme. Taishi C thought was a pretty big deal, but kind of just dies like an idiot here, honestly. He's like, oh, the rebellion must have succeeded, and like charges the wall and hits the wall and bounces back and then is shot with a ton of arrows. It's just like, okay, good job, man.
Oh, I hate when that happens to me.
It's a real bummer. And then, yeah, no, the deal was, you know, you can hold Jingzhou as long as Liu Qi is alive, and then he dies. So, oh no, how's this gonna go?
Find out!
Chapter 54. State Mother Wu meets the bridegroom in a temple. Imperial Uncle Liu... Uncle? What the fuck? Imperial Uncle Liu takes his bride to the wedding chamber. The wedding chamber.
Bride, come with me to the wedding chamber.
It's like something from a reality show. Take him to the wedding chamber. Anyway, enough of my shitposting for now. Kongming chews Lu Su out for not giving Xuanda his due, and Lu Su is somewhat agreeable but unable to cave. Kongming convinces Lu Su to loan Jingzhou to Xuanda until Xuanda can secure Yizhou. It is only when Lu Su gets home to Zhouyu that he realizes this is kind of a raw deal. Xuanda's wife, Lady Gan, passes away, and Zhouyu smells an opportunity to take Jingzhou. He convinces Sun Quan to offer his sister in a fake marriage to Xuanda to lure him to the south so they can kill him. Xuanda goes to pay his respects to the state elder of the Southland, and word travels back to Lady Wu about the planned marriage. In a panic, Sun Quan tries to explain it's just a plot to kill Xuanda, but this only makes Lady Wu more angry about how dishonorable it would be. She meets with Xuanda and decides he would make a great son-in-law and the wedding should happen for real. The wedding goes relatively smoothly, and Xuanda goes to his chambers to be with his wife. However, the chambers are filled with sword-wielding maids. What is going on? Read on.
I hate when I take my wife to my the wedding chambers and they're filled with sword-wielding maids.
I don't want to spoil. I did read a little bit ahead because I did want to solve this read on because it's just funny. And the next chapter is literally just Lady Sun being like, I think swords are cool. Fucking chill out.
Yeah. Not to talk too much about the movie since we're going to discuss that next week, but this character is introduced in Redcliffe much earlier in this timeline, and she is awesome.
I mean, like, yeah, the way she's set up is like, they're like, oh, we'll have this scheme. She'll, you know, she'll marry your sister, who of course is just like a super sick lady who loves swords, and this will go real bad for him. Which, yeah, I'm immediately a fan of this lady who just like has all of her handmaids trained to use swords because she thinks it would be cool. Like, hell yeah. That's great.
If you're going to set a plot to murder someone by tricking them into thinking they're going to be part of a marriage, don't make the plan dependent on no one else finding out about the marriage. Because Kongming's whole strategy of just spreading 500 soldiers around, openly talking and buying supplies for the marriage, is enough to make people go, well, if we actually do kill him over this, my daughter is going to be a laughingstock, and also no one will ever trust our family again. So we kind of have to have this marriage.
It is pretty great. Like, Sun Quan is like, okay, fine. Listen, Mom, I respect your wishes. Of course, I'm a good son. You can meet with him. And he's like, set a bunch of guards in the hallways. She's not going to like him, and then we can kill him. And he walks in, and she's like, oh, what a great son-in-law. And he's like, fuck. I really enjoy how much she just immediately takes to him, and just like over the course of the rest of the chapter, just like every time things go bad, Xuanda just goes turn is like, Mom, they're being mean. it's very good.
These whole chapters are like not as, you know, you can't really get as exciting as last week. But I like the structure of the book just fine. I'm having a good time. Just the book's good, enjoying it, glad to have got through these chapters as usual. Don't really have anything specific to say other than, you know, all this stuff is good. I like Juan de just walking into a trap basically completely oblivious, but it's fine because he's just nice.
And because the people around him are smart. So
yeah, that's all you need. You don't need to be smart.
I do appreciate, and you know, you wouldn't expect this sort of thing in this text, where when the idea is presented to him, Shwanda's like, I mean, I'm 50. I'm kind of old for her, aren't I? Just like, oh, bless you, Shwanda. Nobody else in this book would have said that. They would have just said, hell yeah. Take her to my bird tower.
Oh, that fucking tower.
Oh, I still can't believe that shit was real. It seems so much like Kongming was like, I know, I'll make up a song about how Cao Cao wants to bone your wife, and it was real.
It was real the whole time. He was sitting there like, oh, I need a bird tower.
I can't fucking believe it.
I also want to call attention to the deal they have with Jingzhou, the one they have Lu Su put his name on. Like, the whole, oh, we're going to give back this territory as soon as we have this other place you want to settle. It doesn't have a date for when it's supposed to happen. It doesn't have any further details aside from that. And Kong Ming gets the brilliant idea of being like, oh yeah, why don't you just put your name on it too? It'll look more official that way. And Sun Quan's just like,
you moron! Why do they keep sending him? They've sent him so many times.
Shouyu's words left Lu Su numb. After a time, he said, I don't think Shwanda would sell me out. You stupid fucker.
And if Shwanda wouldn't, his whole relationship with Kong Ming has been the two of them telling other people what they aren't supposed to tell and getting each other into hot water. So why would you take suggestions from Kong Ming again?
And I do. So Shouyu then makes Lu Su send the message to Sun Quan, and Sun Quan takes one look at it and is like, what the fuck? Why are you this stupid? It's like,
I simply cannot say.
Yeah, I do also like that. I mean, without conferring, Shouyu is so fond of schemes and so confident that even without consulting his lord, he's like, no, it's fine. I'll just offer my lord's sister in marriage. He'll be cool with it. Like, I would not have the guts to be like, it's cool, just give your sister up.
And he's pretty lucky that more didn't happen to him after Sun Quan's mother was like, what the fuck are you doing? Because I feel like in any other story, Sun Quan would have turned to him and been like, you did this to me. You did this. You're going down.
Sun Quan respects his advisors, even when they're wrong.
Even when they tried to marry away their own sisters.
Oh, didn't try. He was extremely successful.
Very true.
I also do like that when Kong Ming sends Shwanda off with Xiao Qi Long, he's like, here are three bags of schemes. Just like, open them when you feel you need a scheme.
And open them in the correct order.
And then they're on their travel, and Xilong said, it is time to read the first of the Director General's stratagems. Like the ceremonial opening of the scheme. I understand now. When we were earlier on in this book, I couldn't stand Shwanda. But he's really just made by the people around him, where if he was smart, none of this would be good. what a beautiful, beautiful story.
It's a good time for all.
We're getting pretty close to the end of part one here.
Yeah.
Relatively speaking. I guess it's chapter 70 is the last chapter, so I guess we're not that close.
I mean, we are. The part two is a bit shorter.
Oh.
120 chapters, so we are like almost a couple weeks away from halfway.
Wow.
That's pretty exciting.
I know. So.
Well.
I guess with that, we're done with the podcast.
Yes, we are. We'll take it here to the plug zone. As is traditional, our solo representative gets the primary plug spot, gets that front seat.
Yeah, you can find me at Headfalls Off on Twitter. You can find M at EM underscore being. Both of our podcasts are at abnormalmapping.com. There's a whole bunch there. You check them all out. And if you like them, you can support us at patreon.com/abnormalmapping. And you can listen to Gundam for $1 a month. It's good.
Eventually, you'll be covering this in Gundam.
I know. In hang on, you go, and then I'll tell you when it is.
Okay, Jen, take it away.
Okay, so I'm at JBU3 on Twitter. Most of my stuff is on scanlinemedia.com or patreon.com/scanlinemedia. We did recently start back up our visual novel book club podcast, which happens to be on the Abnormal Mapping Network, and you can find that at readinggames.online. I'm glad that everything's moving forward with that now. And yeah, a lot of exciting stuff happening.
And then as far as me, I am Six Detmar. You can find me on Twitter at Six Detmar, SixDetmar. ScanlineMedia.com, Patreon.com/ScanlineMedia. Hope you're enjoying the week of our Game of the Year content that should be going on right now. If that's too many podcasts for you, it's fine. You can just put them off till later. I understand. We may have overreached a little bit, but it'll be good. You'll have a good time. What's the date on that anime? There,
that is 17th of January 2023. 17th of December 2023. Sorry.
That's a ways away.
So we are ending 2023 covering the Gundam Sangoku then. Show.
Well, we'll be long done with this book by then.
Oh, you know it.
We'll have to read Romance of the Four Kingdoms.
That's not. They didn't do that. That's not.
No, there was. They had another kingdom after this.
That's not.
It's the DLC. It's the Ashen Wolves, right?
Oh, right. I forgot that happened.
Wait, do you think the Three Houses thing is supposed to be a Three Kingdoms analog? I literally didn't think of that until now.
It's made by the Three Kingdoms team.
Well, listen, Jackson, I'm stupid.
It's like 12 people at Intelligent Systems, and then like everyone from the Koei Three Kingdoms team worked on that game. That's why the game is 7,000 hours long. Like, even
you
compared
can't
to
take the fact that I'm dumb away from me. I won't allow it. It's mine forever.
That's valid.
But until next time, folks, read on.
Read on.
Read on.